down to earth. Gucci around the purse, bougie never. Shoes be matching with a poofy leather.
And the theme song is so, so smooth. This is The Week in Food, The Week in Review at Heritage Radio Network with me, Jack Inslee. And I'm joined, as always, by the...
Me, Aaron Fairbanks.
Yes. Aaron Fairbanks, for those of you who don't know, is the executive director of this wonderful radio station network that we live and work in called Heritage Radio Network, and I'm the executive producer. So what's up, Aaron? How you doing?
I'm doing good. Lots of good vibes in the studio today. Excited to tuck in. It was such a fun week.
It was, right? I mean, it's funny. It's the last week of the season here at Heritage Radio Network. And I've been kind of like telling all the hosts, it feels like that last week of school where, you know, like you're letting the kids slide a little bit. They don't really do the homework. They leave class a little early. I've been nice and lenient with the hosts this week.
Well, one of us has to be. That's not usually my job, but.
Good cop, bad cop.
Meow, meow.
Oh, there I am. I'm going to edit that. Good cop, bad cop.
Meow, 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 meow. That's my siren sound.
So if you're tuning into this for the first time, we like to start this week in review going over our last delicious bite that we had this week. So Aaron, I want to start with you. What did you have this week that was just delicious?
Well, my last delicious bite was the result of love.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, the two folks who are partners and founders in this really interesting gelato and sorbet company called Dolceza, which is down in D.C., Virginia area, they actually met while taking a kind of psychedelic trip to the Amazon. So basically, Trippin' Balls fell in love, got married, came back to the U.S., decided to launch a gelato and sorbet company. They were hanging with us earlier this week and brought a bunch of amazing gelatos and sorbets to taste. And the Santa Rosa plum was like... mind-blowing sorbet. So good.
It's funny because every time I trip my face off, I'm like, you know, god damn it, I gotta fall in love and make gelato one of these days.
I thought it was just me.
They really went for it.
It was kind of wild. Definitely an interesting origin story, and also kind of one of those reminders of how small the food world is. They came to us through our friend John, who works with Stumptown, because Stumptown has a little kind of roasteria in one of their ice cream shops down in the DC area. And you know, you start tracking back and it's like X person knows Y person, and all of a sudden we're like, man, people who like good food just end up hanging.
Ain't that the truth? I'm proud to say that I cooked my last delicious bite.
Cheers.
with no small hand from Quincible. As I continue to champion Quincible on this week in review. I love them. They're great. I'm a proud subscriber. I think I'm coming on my 1 year anniversary of being a Quincible dude. So me and Odetta made some black bass tacos with cilantro yogurt sauce and pickled onions. It was really, really, really nice.
I would buy that calendar, Quincible Dudes. Dudes of Quincible.
I'm down. Let me be January. Let's go. I'm totally, totally down. So that was my week in eating, but let's move on to the week in the studio. As we transition to our recap of the over 35 shows a week we do here, impossible to catch them all.
So many shows.
So much. We can't even hear them all. So we're here to kind of make it easy for you and point out some of the highlights in the studio. So highlight for me, and I think a lot of our listeners, was we did have Jarobi, the kind of honorary fourth member of A Tribe Called Quest. He was in on the finale of Taste Talks, which was a wonderful program hosted by Sarah Zorn, who is with Northside Media Group. And they closed out the series with Jarobi. Did you ever listen to Tribe Called Quest, Aaron?
Do I not seem like a girl who can kick it?
Yeah.
I mean,
hey, all
so
right.
It's funny. I was like hanging last night and I was listening to, On My Mind, right? And one of those things where you're just like, damn, I know all these songs. I didn't even know I knew all these songs.
That is great. I mean, Jarobi was such a nice dude. Like I said, he's kind of like the honorary fourth member, so he wasn't really rapping on all the songs, but they're always talking about him. He's in all the music videos. The way I understand the story is he was like always in the studio with them, cracking jokes, setting the moods, like giving them some ideas for topics. So
setting the vibes.
Setting the vibes. And we're going to play a little clip of him on the show so you can hear just what he sounded like.
Have these two sides of you exist side by side? And do you think if you'd understood how to achieve that balance way back when, you could have continued on with A Tribe Called Quest?
Yeah. I didn't, you know, I'm like a rhinoceros, just one way forward. You know what I mean? So now, to me, it doesn't really seem like there's that much of a difference. You know what I mean? Because the music business and the cooking business are very similar in that the immediate gratification of it. You know, you're only as good as your last song. You're only as good as your last plate. You know what I mean? You play a record and people immediately bob their head. Somebody takes a forkful of your food. They do that look. They roll their eyes back. That look. Like, so it's pretty much the same. You know, it's very similar to me.
Food and music.
Food and music. Bonita Applebaum.
So did you know, so what he's doing is he's doing these like Taco Tuesday things actually over at Bedvine in Bed-Stuy.
Oh, I love Bedvine.
So another great musician figure who is transitioning into the lovely world of food.
You are all welcome to our world. Please come.
I know the staff at Roberta's was also very geeked out to meet him. As soon as they got word that he was in here, they were all kind of fighting over who was going to wait on his table.
Well, it's like one of those funny things. I mean, like looking at that, Bonita Applebaum was probably like the song that I most identify with A Tribe Called Quest. But I was looking back over it, and that song has been sampled or referenced by like everyone. Jay-Z, Missy Elliott, the Fugees, Black Eyed Peas, Lil Wayne. Like similar again to food, where there's like people are referential. You know, someone puts something out and people take it and use it and shape it, and it becomes a whole new other thing. It's so cool.
Totally. So shifting gears in a completely different direction, we had a really wonderful season finale of Inside School Food, the show hosted by Laura Stanley, which covers exactly what you think it would, school food and school food policy and all the things that go into feeding our kids at school. So she had somebody named Dr. Julie Manella of the Monell Chemical Senses Center, who does research in kind of like taste and the kids' reactions to food and how we can make things taste better and introduce kids to new flavors. So it was a really a nice break from some of the policy-driven stuff that Laura does, and I really found this episode fascinating. I want to play a little short clip of Julie on the program so you can see what I'm talking about.
You talked about judicious use of flavor elements to mask bitter, to get children who are very sensitive to bitter slowly acclimated. What did you mean by that?
Children like sweet and salt by themselves, but they also are important because they mask or block the unpleasant taste in food, mm-hmm. for example, the bitter. And so whether the child's sensitive to bitter or not, you can see that it really reduces the bitterness of a number of food grade bitters, increasing its acceptance. It's basically the rule of cuisine. Mm-hmm. Salt and sweet are used in all cultures around the world. That by reducing the unpleasant notes, it brings out the more pleasant. So, you know, a little sugar and a little salt can go a long way in increasing the palatability of bitter-tasting foods, for example, vegetables.
I love bitter.
I know, right? I felt the same way.
But that is the thing. I was actually, like, the most kind of bitter substance, like, to humans in the world is apparently comes from the gourd family. And it's something, it's called, I'm going to totally botch this, but I'm going to try the pronunciation. It's like cucurbitaceans. And apparently it's so strong that even diluted like one part per billion can cause a reaction on your tongue.
I just checked the pronunciation on that. Looks like you botched it. I will say, though, it took me a really long time to get into bitter flavors. It's definitely not something that like made sense to me really until I started hanging around here with all this crazy food community. I don't know. I think a lot of us grow up and we end up with a natural sweet tooth or something. You know, it's interesting to hear her kind of talk about tricking the kids into enjoying more bitter veggie flavors.
Yeah, sure. Any other highlights? Like, what else folks can expect to hear from that episode?
Just a real look into the kind of taste psychology of kids, which, I mean, what a rabbit hole to go into.
Yeah, send it to your friends with kids when they say, my kid won't eat anything. It can be kind of like defense or offense, depending on how you want to look at it.
Exactly right. And to close out our studio recap here, this was a really fun episode. Dave Arnold on Cooking Issues, talking about the BLT. You like a BLT, Erin?
Come on. Does anyone not like a BLT?
Who knows?
Yes. And it's actually, just thinking about it now, it's making me feel like what I've been doing with my summer, because I haven't even had a BLT yet.
Oof. Well, let's start the conversation with Dave's rules for what a BLT should be.
Do not let people make their own BLT sandwiches, because they will not put mayonnaise on both the top and the bottom piece of toast. Do not over-toast your BLT so that your mouth becomes excoriated from the BLT as you chew on it.
It's true.
Do not make a BLT from a bread with too much structure. This will ruin the effect of a BLT sandwich. Do not make a BLT with some wimpy kind of like fancy Dan lettuce that doesn't have good crunch. My preferred BLT lettuce is iceberg. Crap on all of you. Anyone going to come out against me on this? What do you use?
No, I think that's correct.
All right. A good tomato, right? And like three strips of good bacon,
yeah.
Salt, pepper, that's it. You should also salt the tomato separately, and you should pepper the mayonnaise on each side of the bread.
Amen.
That is how you make a freaking BLT sandwich.
Oof.
Preach. I just have one question. Was this before or after the cannabinoid?
Oh my goodness. So full disclosure, he did drink cannabis tea mere moments before going on that that rant on BLTs. But he says he didn't feel anything. Nastasia says she didn't feel anything. They say it takes a little while to kick in. They tasted the tea. They were up for it. They were game. I wimped out because I had a long day ahead of me. But apparently they said they didn't feel anything. I don't know.
You have to, like, listen to the rest of the episode.
You have to listen to the rest of the episode and see how weird it got. I will say this. There was a very heated debate on this show about what makes a sandwich a sandwich. So, can a quesadilla be called a sandwich?
Get out of here.
This was a question raised on the show. I don't know. Dave, again, had very, very strong opinions, and nothing makes me happier than hearing Dave rant. So, I suggest you all do the same. And that brings us to the breakdown. Man, that amps you up.
Fight, 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 fight.
Exactly. Are you ready for this breakdown, Erin?
Oh, man, lay it on me.
All right. So the New York Times this week wrote an article which states that health experts criticize Coca-Cola's funding of a nonprofit organization of scientists who focus on fighting obesity through exercise, not diet. So the story here being Coca-Cola pushing out these funded research projects, which kind of pushes the agenda in their favor, saying it's not the soda making you fat, it's that you're not exercising.
I wish that was true. I love exercising and I love eating, but I also love science.
Yeah. So a lot to break down with this. And we thought we would check in with the person we know who knows the most about these things, Dr. Marion Nestle, who we've done an Evolutionaries feature with. She's been a longtime friend and supporter of the network. She started the food studies program at NYU, which so many of our interns have come from. I mean, what more can I say about Marion, Erin?
I want to hear what she has to say.
Let's do it. So this was, I got a chance to chat with her this week, and here was her reaction.
Well, the New York Times on Monday published an extraordinary piece on how Coca-Cola funds nutrition scientists to argue that exercise is more important than what you eat when it comes to obesity.
And What are some of the parallels you see here between the soda industry and the tobacco industry in this kind of attempt to sway the public perception of science and health?
Well, what you see is the food industry, in this case Coca-Cola, following the tobacco industry playbook to the letter. And that playbook, which has been very well documented, shows that the first thing you do is you try to discredit the science. You want to cast doubt on it. You want people to think that the science that links cigarettes to lung cancer really isn't as strong as you'd like it to be, and there are real uncertainties about it. And similarly, Coca-Cola would like to, obviously, wants people to think that drinking Coca-Cola has nothing to do with obesity, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, or any other health problem. And the best way to do that is to try to cast doubt on the extraordinary amount of science that shows otherwise.
And where do you think we are in the trajectory of the soda industry? I mean, if we think about tobacco and where tobacco is now and where they were maybe 10 years ago, you know, where are we with soda?
Well, I have a very personal interest in this because I have a book coming out in October called Soda Politics Taking on Big Soda, parenthesis, and Winning, close parenthesis. And I think we're winning. I think the New York Times article is an example of how we're winning. The public is increasingly aware of the way in which food companies are manipulating public opinion about these kinds of things, manipulating the science. And this is especially the case with soft drinks, Coca-Cola and PepsiCo. So I think it's a pretty exciting time. I was really happy to see this article.
And then one last thing. I mean, what about the issue at large of sort of these public swaying of perception of science and opinion from all major food corporations with all these kind of, like, you know, how do you know when your source is not corrupt with corporate influence on some of these studies?
Well, I tell everybody that the first thing they should look at when they're looking at a scientific study that comes out with a result that favors a particular food product or class of products, look to see who paid for it. And the really great thing that has happened is that most professional journals, medical and nutrition journals, require authors to disclose who pays who paid for the study and who pays them. And once you have those disclosures, you can do what I've been trying to do on my website for the last several months, which is to collect studies that come out with results favorable to industry and just point out who pays for them. What this all highlights is the really desperate need for federal funding of research. People who do nutrition research complain they just can't get any money to do their studies. And so they take money from corporations. And guess what? Their studies invariably come out with results that favor whoever paid for it. He who pays the piper calls the tune. And I'm sorry that it is that way, but that's how it is, and that's why we need independent funding of research.
Damn. You know, a stat that really stuck out to me in that article was apparently when you're looking at full-calorie sodas, consumption in the U.S. is down 25% this year. That's huge.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that she's really feeling like we're winning. We're winning this fight.
Well, the other thing that this made me immediately think about is, you know, we're really gearing up into the next election cycle and, like, what are kind of the next round of presidential elects, where are they standing on these food issues? And it was really interesting to see that actually Wendy Clark, who is the chief marketing executive for Coca-Cola, actually took a leave of absence at the beginning of this year from January to March to allegedly consult with the Hillary Clinton campaign to provide some of her marketing savvy and expertise to help Hillary be more Hillary as she embarked on her presidential campaign. So I have to say, when our elected officials are looking to the marketing arms of these types of companies, you have to really think about agenda setting there. And that expertise, I think that's an area that the food space, we are like not winning. Like, we as marketers, we as people controlling the story, we have a lot to learn. I would love Wendy Clark to come in and work for us.
Right. And I guess one of the takeaways here, right, it's like, you know, when you read a stat, when you read a report, see who funded it.
Well, that, and I do say, like, you know, having a Coke isn't like a bad thing. You know, I like having a Coca-Cola once in a while. I like having a slice of cake once in a while, an ice cream cone. But I think those things are like in the same category. And I think that's another space we need to be careful about is, you know, demonizing in the aggregate, but also thinking about at an individual level, you want to have a soda now and then, like, no big deal.
I have to say, I mean, Dr. Pepper is a really wonderful product.
You and David Chang.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this, I'm drinking a lot less soda than I was 5 years ago, so hopefully the rest of the world is
part of that 25%.
Exactly. So let's brighten the mood a little bit and give some big ups, shall we? All right, it's big ups. This is where we big up things, people, stuff that we love. And the theme song is provided by the band Big Ups, ex-engineers here at Heritage Radio. And I'm excited to hear who you're going to big up today, Aaron.
Well, I have to give a shout out for Christina Tosi, a Heritage Radio Network member and the most recent cover girl of Cherry Bomb magazine. I know you have a little bit of a crush on Christina.
You know, if you didn't say it, I was going to.
What I didn't know is that she actually, when she was in college, was studying to be an electrical engineer.
What? Really?
Yeah. And when she originally got hired by David Chang, it wasn't to make desserts. It was to write his food safety plan. And they were just kind of like fooling around. The, you know, the Momofuku Empire at that time had no dessert menu. So it was really this kind of organic iteration that has turned into this whole dessert phenomena that she is at the forefront of. And I just think that she's so rad. I cannot wait to read the article. You know, Carrie and Claudia from Cherry Bomb Magazine and Cherry Bomb Radio do such an amazing job putting together a collection of women that I want to hear from and hear more from. And, you know, some that I haven't even discovered yet. So should be hitting the newsstands in about 2 weeks. And I have already, you know, visited their website to get my copy in the mail.
I love the story of the crack pie. I don't know if you ever read that story, but it was like a mistake during staff meal. And she botched whatever she was trying to do. And then it came out and it blew everybody's mind. And she's like, oh, wait a minute.
You might want to explain what the crack pie is.
There's really only one way, and it's to eat it, but it's the most delicious. It's like a chess pie. I think that's what it's called, right? The southern version.
Yeah, it's like a...
Which is like a lot of butter, a lot of sugar.
Yeah, it's basically like a pie that is all like butter, sugar, chocolate, but it's kind of all that. It's like all the...
Yeah.
What's usually kind of like the topping or the exterior or the bits, except... It's all of that.
Oh, man. It's something special. Well, I want to big up our buddy Damon Bolte, who hosts the Speakeasy here on the network and recently opened, not recently, I guess it's been 4 months now, he opened Grand Army Bar with Daniel Krieger and Noah Burnimoff from Mile End. And this is a really, really great seafood, raw seafood, like a raw bar, cocktail bar in the Carroll Gardens area. And I took my dad to this bar. Now, my dad is kind of like, or was, I should say, a lame, like, you know, I only drink martinis kind of guy.
Martinis are good, but only martinis?
I mean, maybe like a Cosmo or something. Let's just say he hadn't really ever been introduced to real cocktails. And Damon, like the genius he is, you know, we just kind of put it in his hands. I like to tell him just omakase, Damon, you know. Like, go ahead. And he serves my dad a variation on a martini without even asking him what he likes. I guess he just kind of pegs my dad for a martini kind of guy. Gives him a variation with this Old Tom gin and I think like a coriander syrup or something. It was like a savory, totally funky and weird martini that blew my dad's mind. And then the next thing he follows up with is a Martinez, which is the precursor to the martini. And he tells my dad the whole story about how the Martinez was born and why the martini came from the Martinez. Needless to say, by the end of this whole experience, my dad's head was spinning. He's like, wow, I did not know bartenders could be craftsmen just like quite like that. And it was nice to kind of see it in action, you know, because I feel like we're spoiled hanging out with a guy like Damon all the time.
Yeah, I just feel like, what's your dad going to do?
Yeah, now what?
Now what?
Now you go to a bar in Queens and you try to replicate that experience. Like, no, nah, not so much.
All right, you can't be out on Queens
Sorry,
like that.
What I meant to say was Bayside, Queens. So business owners in Bayside put me on because I've hung out there and I haven't seen very much. Just saying.
Wishes into the universe. Well, I don't know. What are you looking forward to coming up? I know that Jessica B. Harris has a new episode coming out. Where are we going with her this next week here?
You know, me and Jess are on the same page here. She's going to Miami, and so am I. I get to go to Miami at the end of the month, and she's doing this whole episode about Miami. I should really re-listen to that, actually. She talks about the whole history of Miami, Miami Beach, what to eat, what to check out. It's really worth a listen.
Yeah, so check the website, I think, next Thursday?
Yeah, that is correct. Awesome. Next Thursday. I believe it's the 20th.
The 20th. Yep,
something
you're right.
Like that.
You're right.
There we go. Yeah, and then we're on break. This is the summer break, so we're doing a lot of cool house cleaning stuff here, literally and figuratively.
A lot of cool house cleaning stuff.
Yeah.
This is Jack's code for getting excited about reupholstering chairs with, Ask a Clean Person host, Jolie Kerr.
Totally, and like cleaning out hard drives and, you know, all that fun stuff. But we gotta keep this place in top shape, you know?
Yeah, get ready. Still save that date, September 21st. We'll have the new website launch, and if you're in the tri-state area, come down, hang with us in the back of Roberta's, toast the new website, be one of the first to see it. It is free. We will be here hanging, and we would love to see you.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for listening to another Week in Review. This is Jack Inslee with Aaron Fairbanks, and if you like any of the stuff you've heard here, it's all available on heritageradionetwork.org and iTunes, just like all of our content. So we'll see you next week. Peace.
Bye.